Monster Culture, a podcast about the monsters, spooks, and nasty guys that inhabit your favorite fantasy settings. We're your hosts. I'm Colin, and I hate it when toads sit on me.
Hi, I'm Noel, and while I'm sometimes covered in mold, I am not actually a fungus.
And today we're talking about a race that can give your players some truffle. Mushroomin.
First, updates?
Nothing too big has happened since the last episode, I don't think.
Yeah, pretty much.
I apologize for the general quality of the past couple of episodes. I still haven't dialed in Skype exactly. It does a thing where it tries to correct the audio to be of similar levels, but because our gain is turned up for better quality, it ends up making us sound really quiet. I don't know. I'll figure it out at some point.
You guys stuck with us through the first few. We appreciate if you stick with us through these. And overall, it'll be just better for everyone.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, he's pretty slow.
Yeah.
Just researching, playing games.
Yeah. Mushroom Men.
What are Mushroom Men?
Well, generally, they're mushrooms that are humanoid in some fashion. They can ambulate, and they're sentient and intelligent.
Interesting. I don't think I could have gotten that from the name. They should probably pick a better name for that.
Oh yeah. We'll go over some over the course of this episode. This is probably out of all of the stuff we've covered, this one is definitely one of the most, constructed races. There's no historic or folklore evidence for mushroom people of any sort.
Right. The closest is mushroom clothing for fairies.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
And, fairy circles and mushrooms generally have an association with the supernatural.
Yes.
If you go through a circle of toadstools, you could be spirited away to the fairy realm.
Right.
Many cultures involved eating certain kinds of mushrooms to achieve divine enlightenment.
It's true.
Yeah.
Didn't always end well, but I guess contact with the divine doesn't always end well either. So
yeah.
It sort of balances out.
Supposedly, Norse berserkers, their berserker rage was from some kind of mushroom drug high.
Huh. I hadn't heard that one. I'd heard it might have been a form of PTSD, but I'd never heard that it was mushroom-induced.
I forget which species of mushroom they think it is, but it does raise aggression a bit and can cause, hallucinations. It's mostly just kind of an armchair theory, honestly.
Right, as most of them are, really.
Yeah.
Because we can't exactly go back and, hey, what makes you mad enough to swallow coals?
Yeah. But yeah, mushroom people mostly come from, modern culture.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Most of it's straight from D&D, really.
Yeah.
You don't get much of it before that, come to think of it.
Well, you did have a 1960s Japanese movie called Matengo.
That you did.
Which, I guess the basic plot of it is it's a classic 50s, 60s, monster movie.
Right.
I would imagine you would go see it at a drive-in. It seems like that kind of movie.
Oh, it really, really feels like a drive-in film.
Yeah.
I'd love to watch it at a drive-in. Just all the lights off. You've got the crackly radio audio coming over, and it's just, that sounds so good.
Oh, man. And then, the whole menu for the night is, mushroom-themed. They've got, truffle oil fries. And
deep-fried mushrooms.
Yeah.
Oh, now I want some of those.
Man, mozzarella-stuffed portobellos.
Oh, that's so good. Dude, portobello burgers.
Portobello burgers are pretty good.
They are. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, man. But, yeah, Matengo, the plot is basically you have some people that go to an island. And the island is infested with mushroom people, who
right.
then eat everyone on the island.
Yeah, basically. And then, a couple of people escape, and then bad stuff. But that's Matengo. It's a classic movie. It's worth looking into.
Another classic, Fungi from Gilgoth by
yes.
H.P. Lovecraft.
Right. A collection of sonnets, poetry, and stories written by H.P. Lovecraft in his early days.
Yeah.
Called, as you said, Fungi from Gilgoth. It's doesn't have a main connecting theme. It's just a big collection of things.
Yeah.
But he later expanded on the concept of the title by actually creating a Yuggoth, which is thought to be like a Planet X sort of thing outside of the usual solar system.
Yeah.
A pitch black planet filled with cities and such, inhabited by the Migo. They are a fungal-based, almost crustacean-looking sort of race who have basically perfected surgery and genetics, especially on humans, able to take out and allow a brain to survive in a little jar and actually enable it to see higher things and such like, supposedly made of partially unearthly matter so they can't be caught on photographic film and whatnot. Yeah. All of Lovecraft's usual... This is alien.
They also have, like, really weird butterfly wings for some reason.
Yes, because at the time, the prevailing theory about space was that it was an ether.
Yeah.
And they used those wings to fly through it.
Yeah.
Much like the, I believe they were called the old ones. Anyway, the folks in the Mountain of Madness.
Yeah.
Wings to sail through the ether were a very common thing for Lovecraft as well. Which, given the time and the science of the time, made sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you had to be able to get through space, so flap your wings.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
Yep. But no, the Migo are actually kind of interesting in that their moral system for what they have is completely alien to humans, so they seem incredibly malicious and malign. But
they're the aliens from The Color of Space, right?
No, they're the aliens from The Whisperer in Darkness.
Okay, all right.
The Color Out of Space is just some weird thing.
Okay.
It's just some weird poisonous metal. That's it. Which I really liked. I liked The Color Out of Space. It was good. But The Whisperer in Darkness is cool because it also allowed him to work in some of the names for some of his other creatures and gods and things.
Yeah.
So it was an important one in his mythos.
Yeah.
And it all stemmed from just the simple name he gave to a collection of poems and stories.
Yeah. And I mean, why wouldn't you want to put your brain in a jar and fly past Pluto or something?
I'll be dead honest. Like, the story presents that as some sort of freakish, terrifying thing that makes you unhuman. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
That's, could I get a deal on that?
Yeah. I remember when I was, it was around when, it was around when Cthulhu Tech was kind of winding down and getting less popular for reasons, and around when Ad Ava became a thing that was being, like, homebrewed. There was just, like, around a year or two where just the only tabletop games I was playing in were Lovecraftian-themed mecha games. And I remember, the Migo just always kind of seemed like not too bad of dudes.
Honestly, yeah. They were supposed to be played up to be malicious and malign, but no. They're just kind of, you know, surgery guys. Yeah,
they're just Pluto crustaceans.
Yeah. That's...
They're not even that alien.
I mean, yeah, they're just big old coiled up crabs.
Yeah.
Lobster things. I like them.
Yeah.
Especially that they were fungus. I have, as you will come to see, a soft spot for fungi.
Yeah.
Let's see.
You have the toads from Mario.
Yep.
Everyone's favorite mushroom people.
It's true. I mean, it's so odd to include them on this list, but they are. They're toadstools.
Yeah. I mean, they're from the mushroom kingdom.
Yeah. I mean, they got little, like, Amanita caps for heads.
Yeah.
They're just little... cutie dwarf mushroom guys.
Yeah, they wear like genie pants and vests.
Yep. Which I think is pretty cool. It's a nice fashion.
Yeah.
What I want to know, though, is how Princess Peach came to rule them. She's a vegetable, not a mushroom.
I thought she was even, like, a person.
She is. I'm just making a Peach joke.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't get that one.
Yeah. I mean, you know...
Then again, you have King Bowser chasing after her, so... And then you've got a plumber from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It just, the whole setting doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, aristocracy is rarely, you know, breeds with the lower classes, so.
Granted. I suppose that's a spore subject.
Yeah. But I guess, the toads are, they're what, like turnip farmers?
Yeah, it's like turnips or radishes or something. Yeah. Horseradishes, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're actually real good at thinking about it. With the size of them turnips?
And in general, the Mushroom Kingdom's a pretty, like, I don't know, it's a pretty hot place. Like, it's got a lot of deserts. It's mostly jungle or tropical forests, it looks like.
Yeah, you've got, like, tropical forests. You've got the occasional grassland.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like a pretty nice place. A little bit dry for mushrooms, I would think, but... Yeah.
Well, I mean, in general, you don't find them out in the desert area, but,
true, you know. You see the cacti guys.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. You know, not a lot of snow, though. Very, very warm-bodied people.
Granted. Hmm.
That is weird that there's, like, I can't think of a snow level in, like, Super Mario World or anything.
Not in the originals. I can't either. Dang.
Yeah. Eventually, with all this, we do get to D&D.
Right.
Which has Myconids.
Myconids.
And by extension, Pathfinder has
Myceloids.
Yeah, Myceloids.
And the Myconids are not to be confused with Myconikes.
Yes.
I have made that mistake once or twice.
I do love Myconikes.
Yep.
But yeah, they're basically, they're mushroom people.
Yeah, they're big mushroom.
Yeah, like if you took a mushroom and you gave it arms and legs and maybe some eyes.
Yes, yeah, that seems to be a common theme, is that they're basically just mushrooms who have like little root-like legs and root-like arms, and they're big and tubby and fat, and they have little squinty eyes.
Yeah. Ironically, they are one of the few races in the Underdark that are not evil.
Right. They are supposedly neutral, lawful neutral. But they always come off as more good.
Yeah.
Honestly. They're happy to be peaceful with everyone. As long as you don't attack them, they're cool with you. They'll even give you telepathic powers for an hour.
Yeah.
They're just real happy guys.
I guess being lawful kind of contributes to that.
Yeah, yeah.
They're well known for, at the beginning of the Dritz book, Exile. Dritz is hanging out with them, and they're, like, you know, totally cool with them, and they're all just having a good time until, you know, the rest of the drow show up and massacre the entire colony.
As they are wont to do.
Yeah. And I guess occasionally they do get, you know, overtaken by some kind of, you know, evil spellcasting wizard or something and are put in thrall, but, you know, they seem like nice people.
Yeah, generally, they're folks I would like to hang out with, honestly. If I had to choose anyone from the Underdark, granted that leads me to, like, two races that are hospitable, it would probably be them.
Yeah.
Although, Flumps are also real cool.
Yeah. Oh, Flumps.
We should do an episode on Flumps sometime. We couldn't, though.
Yeah.
They have one appearance.
Yeah. Ever. Well, you have Flumps, and then you have Flumps' brother from 13th Age, Wibbles. But yeah, like so many other different things, Pathfinder looked at Myconids and were like, man, these aren't cool or brutal enough, and so they made Myceloids, which are just mushroom people.
Asshole Myconids.
Yeah, asshole Myconids that will infect you with their spores.
Mm-hmm.
Their spore child will eat their way out of you, and then they will then feast together on your dead body so that you can't be resurrected.
Right, that's exactly it, too.
Yeah.
That is their shtick, their trifecta of fuck you.
Yeah. I don't know, it kind of... I'm not a big Pathfinder fan. I feel like I've said this on the show before.
I believe we've both expressed our lack of enthusiasm for finding paths.
Yeah. This kind of highlights a problem I have with the way the setting approaches horror. It's basically just shock and awe, bloody descriptions,
yes.
Viscera, that kind of stuff. Very, very little of the horror is set up to actually be, you know...
psychological or... Yeah. Even just tense or whatever. All you have is, and I quote, drowning on your own bloody vomit and exsanguinating.
Yeah.
That is the Myceloid's method of murder.
Yeah.
That's it. And I mean, I'm not saying if used properly, that can't be good horror. I'm just saying that's what it relies on.
Yeah.
Every time.
It's, you're not going to find a Myceloid adventure path that involves, you know, general, you know, not being able to trust your senses because you're being poisoned by mushrooms and not knowing what's real anymore or anything like that. You're just gonna, you know, you're gonna see a mushroom person rip a peasant in half, probably.
Yeah, that's basically it.
But yeah, I mean, going back to...
They're still interesting as enemies,
yeah,
but could be more nuanced.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely, like we mentioned earlier with Urgot, you could pull from that kind of, you know, crazy psychological...
Oh, yeah.
Terror.
Now, that would make them real interesting. Find, like, a subspecies of Myceloids that actually come off as okay, folks. And they, you know, you get some food, whatever, they offer you food, and then you're hallucinating for days.
Yeah.
And it's not a fun hallucination either. I mean, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
What's up next?
We've got Thalids in Magic the Gathering.
I like Thalids. I really do. They're overlooked, underutilized, and really only had a run in two segments.
Yeah.
Well, three, I guess. They had their original in the Dominaria plot, the Time Spiral and whatnot, at which point they were used as basically cattle for the elves. The elves basically raised them because there wasn't much food elsewhere to eat. So they raised them on the rotting corpses of literally everything around them. And then they started showing signs of intelligence and sentience. And then the elves were like, okay, half of us are like, let's kill them before they kill us. And then the other half are like, you know, we could probably teach them and raise them to be people and all that. But then they went the way of the Quarians and the Geth. They were just like, all right, no, we're just going to screw it all. But then the Thalids rose up and wrecked the shit out of the elves. And then there were giant spore Thalids from the future, from the Time Spiral set, that were like dinosaur-sized fungus behemoths.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's that. Alara had Thalids that were on Jund, the red primary section. And they, Jund being as brutal as it was, the Thalids there were tough and hardy. And I believe Ravnica had a few Thalids, if I remember correctly. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thalids were pretty cool. I like them. I like to use them whenever I can, because they have a pretty close relation to Saprolings.
Yeah. I don't feel like it gets... I feel like the execution isn't always very good. Like, a lot of times the artwork for them can look really busy and a little muddy. But I do really appreciate that they pull from more than just, you know... stem and cap mushrooms.
Right. You don't just have Amanitas types. Yeah. You don't just have button mushroom types. Or even just puffballs.
Yeah.
You have moss dogs, which are hounds made of moss and mushrooms. And yeah. They're really cool.
Yeah.
That one was Ravnica.
Yeah, And especially and this is kind of the reason that I think that they don't always get the best, like, physical execution, but a lot of times they work in, you know, gill lines and that kind of stuff to give them texture and look a little bit more alien.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, as an idea, I really like that. And, yeah. I maybe on, you know, not a 1 inch by 1.5 inch card art, they might look a little bit more clear.
Right. One of the things I've noticed, though, that I will complain about Thalids, though, and specifically about the art, is a lot of times they just look like groups of worms.
Yeah.
And while that's interesting, I don't think that really fully supports the whole mushroom-like status, unless you're going for a very specific subset, a very specific species.
Yeah.
And we'll cover that species later.
We've got Lowlife.
Right.
Lowlife is a Savage World setting.
Oh, boy.
The general... idea is that there is an apocalypse on Earth.
Yes.
Resets the world back to a weird, you know, magical fantasy kind of time period. Except everything is whatever survived the nuclear apocalypse.
Yep.
Cockroaches, living piles of mucus.
Living piles of inanimate crud.
Yeah.
You got just weird people with big noses, crazy mutants, and my favorite... Twinkies.
Yep, enlightened Twinkies.
Yep.
Cream Fillions. I was having trouble finding information on the Four Races. I distinctly remember there being a mushroom race, but was not able to find it for this go-around.
The closest I could find were the Smelfs.
Yeah.
And they're just big-nosed people, and they were always adorned with mushrooms.
Yes.
That's the closest I could find.
Yeah. But, you know, oh God, I don't even know where all of my Savage World PDFs got off to, so who knows.
I'd recommend giving Lowlife a look. Yes. I honestly got sucked into reading it just before we started this.
Yeah.
And, oh boy, I did not want to quit.
The art style is really nice. It's like, yes. It's like if Garbage Pail Kids had a D&D-like setting.
It's, honestly, the whole thing feels like if Gamma World met Garbage Pail Kids and Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Honestly. And if that sounds good to you, please go give it a check out. If that sounds awful to you, please give it a look so you can at least laugh at it.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's something you'll not regret looking at one way or the other.
Yeah. We've got Plump Helmet Men. Man, I have never actually run into Plump Helmet Men in any of my time playing Dwarf Fortress.
And you've played rather a lot, haven't you?
It's also because I am so terrified of caverns when I find them that I make a three-tier, like defense Whoa. System around them. You know, I have a locked set of doors that go to a drawbridge, that go to another locked set of doors, that go to a wall.
That's fair. That's very fair.
Oh, man, the last time that I played, I ended up on a map that didn't have a lot of trees, so I'm having to delve into a cavern to chop toadstools. Oh. And so far, it hasn't been a problem. I sent my hunters down there to kill, like, the two crocodiles that were hanging out.
But, okay.
You know, so far, no horrible, you know, unending death monsters or anything.
Thank goodness for that.
And no plump helmet men.
Sad for that, but still.
Great thing about plump helmet men is plump helmets are a very common kind of mushroom. They're a dwarven delicacy.
Right.
One of the things you usually start with in your embarkment, and one of the main ingredients for dwarven wine. And when you kill them, you get a plump helmet spawn out of it. So you can go plant into the field, and it doesn't you know, grow a plump helmet man. It just grows a plump helmet.
Which is pretty cool. I like that.
Yeah.
It's, you know, in case you accidentally use up all your resources, you know, you've got something.
Yeah. And that's kind of a running theme with myconids and mushroom men and that kind of thing. They're one of the few sentient races that it seems 100% okay to eat no matter what.
Yep.
Kind of fucked up.
A little bit, but my opinions on that sort of thing are a little skewed.
Yeah. It's just, you know, like, I can accept that, you know, a gnoll will eat other sentient creatures. Sometimes, you know, orcs or goblins or that kind of thing.
Or kobolds.
Yeah,
or kobolds. It's common for kobolds.
Yeah, but when they do it, it's explicitly as, you know, up there with, like, cannibalism and that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, it's considered one of the true evils.
But you go and you, like, you start, you know, looking into ideas for myconids, and every third one is, oh, well, the human or elven king is a gourmand, and he would like this fine mushroom dish.
He wants a mushroom man's head.
Yeah.
Which I don't like, because I like mushroom men a lot.
Yeah.
I don't think they need harvesting. I mean, if one dies by you, then why not? But they're not cows, people.
Yes. We've got Parwans from Star Wars.
Ah, yeah. Parwans. Yeah, we got Parwans.
Yeah.
They got the name Parwan.
Yeah. They're from the planet Parwa.
Yep. They're moving on.
Yeah.
No, they're
basically in the concept sketches for the Cantina scene in the first Star Wars movie. They were one of the unused sketch ideas of just, you know, this hardy looking mushroom person.
Yep.
Sitting at a table with their tendril arm draped into their whiskey drink. And just nothing ever really got done with them.
Sadly.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen, like, anything come of that. And we saw one thing, to be fair. In the Clone Wars animated series, there is a single Parwan who shows up as a bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And he's considered the most badass bounty hunter in the universe at that time.
Yes.
And he looks really cool, because he's got, like, big old tendrily stalk feet, and he's got a big old tendril body, and he's got, like, I think it's, like, three eyes that you see.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, five total, I want to say, and he's got a big cap on top of his head. He looks really cool.
Yeah. And he's got, like, a cool, like, Chewbacca, like, ammo belt on around.
Yeah, he's
him.
Got the bandolier going on. Yeah. And it looks rad. He looks like a true bounty hunter boss.
Yeah. Oh, man. It reminds me of Blasto, the Hanar Spectre.
Oh, Blasto. Blasto is so cool. Yeah. I wish more had been done with Blasto.
Yeah. We have everyone's favorite mushrooms, the mushrooms from Dark Souls.
Oh, Lord. Mushroom parents. All right. Mushroom parents are mean. We'll just get that out there now.
Well, because they're protecting their mushroom children.
True. Mushroom children are also mean. They're children. You expect that.
Well, they learned it from their mushroom parents.
Right. I want to venture to say that most people have seen the particular gif of the guy who's like, hey, come at me! And then the mushroom parent just whomps him one. That's basically what mushroom... We'll have to get that up on the feed.
Yes.
But that's basically what mushroom parents are in Dark Souls. They're big, slow-moving, slow-looking guys who telegraph their punch straight to hell, but then they move a lot farther than you would expect. So it's like, you think you're out of range, but nope. Sorry, fist to the face. And they're easily capable of one-shotting low-level or even some high-level builds.
Yeah.
So watch out for them, all right? Don't don't mess with them.
Yeah.
Fun little fact, the spell Chameleon in Dark Souls can actually turn you into a mushroom child in that area.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Next up, we've got, Cordyceps from one of my favorite video games, Dot Hack.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. Or they're grunty food. They say their name. They're very cute.
Cordyceps.
Yeah.
I like them. They were fun. They were always interesting to run into. It's between them and Mandragora, those are the ones I remember the most.
Yeah. Oh, man. I need to play those games again. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're a pretty small part, but, you know, I like them.
They're very cool. They're very cool.
Yeah.
They also come from one of my favorite video games, Last of Us.
I've never heard of that game in my entire life. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, Last of Us, for those of you at home who, like my compatriot here, don't live under a rock. No, it's a very good game series by the developer Naughty Dog, or I think it's very good. And it's about a post-apocalyptic future in which Cordyceps has made the jump from taking over ants, which I guess I should expound on Cordyceps to begin with.
Yeah.
Cordyceps itself is a fungus or a group or a species of fungus that actually infects insects and some arachnids and takes over their body and their mind and alters their behavior to do things more beneficial to it. And then slowly kills off its host and grows out of its body, replacing its flesh with its own, just to be eaten or to spread its spores later to more things.
Yeah.
The most popular example is the Cordyceps that takes over ants, or at least this is the most popular in the West. What it does is a spore is, I guess, eaten or inhaled into an ant's system, and it takes root, and it starts growing inside of the ant, and its little mycelium, which is the word for the roots of a mushroom or a fungus, grows up through the ant's system and up into the ant's tiny neural core, brain. And it alters its behaviors, and it forces it to fall down to the ground and then crawl up to a leaf of a very specific height. I think it's like a few inches off the ground. And it has it grip onto it, and then its jaws lock up onto this leaf, and then it dies, at which point the fungus starts growing even faster and takes over the rest of the ant's body and forces a small stalk out the back of its head from which the fruiting body, where you would normally see like the cap of the mushroom or like the big poofy part, it just ejects spores, and that spreads to other ants. And that's Cordyceps.
Yeah.
It also does that for tarantulas, for wasps, for caterpillars, which is the most popular and well-known version of Cordyceps in the East.
Yeah.
Because it's actually viewed medicinally and actually has some good medicinal purposes for humans.
Yeah.
It's supposedly anti-cancer. They haven't quite proven that one, but it seems to be where we're panning out. It's good for, if I recall correctly, boosting immune systems and a bunch of other neat stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, also an aphrodisiac, but what isn't?
Yeah, it's also real fucked up.
Yes, because that one, it's in caterpillars that slumber underneath the ground for years, and it gets into them, and it takes them over, and it actually mummifies the caterpillar. It basically drains it of moisture, turns it into a big root system, and then grows up out of it, out of the ground.
Yeah.
So Cordyceps is creepy.
Yeah.
I love it. But back to my original point. Cordyceps in Last of Us made the jump to humans, and ended up taking over the human nervous system through spores that it puts out, and basically turning them into almost 28 days later rage zombies.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of the game is to try and get this girl who's, you find out early in the game that she's kind of immune, and to get her to safety so that you can make the cure for humanity.
Yeah.
And I won't spoil anything more for that, but yeah. It's really fun. It's made by Naughty Dog. They did a real good job. They remastered it for the PS4 and it looked absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. And, oh man, I just the way they decided to make the Cordyceps look is just really, really nice. Cause,
it is.
Because I do kind of like the actual classic Cordyceps look with the kind of branching, almost coral-like growths that come out.
Yes.
But the doesn't really translate to movement all that well. And the way that they eventually have it, you know, look, where it kind of, it grows up through your throat.
Oh, yeah.
And then makes your head burst and just kind of flanges out from there.
Yeah.
It just has, It's very, it's well designed.
It is. It looks like a cross between a coral and a wood fungus.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. It's absolutely brilliant, honestly. And I look forward to seeing more with that universe, which they said they will eventually do.
Yeah.
But that's Cordyceps.
Yeah.
One of my personal favorite mushrooms.
Yeah. We've got MapleStory. MapleStory has a ton of mushrooms in it.
Oh, yeah?
Cute little hopping around mushrooms. They don't, I mean, you know, they've got little anime faces, and they're basically like if you put a mushroom cap on top of a beanbag chair.
And, that's adorable.
Yeah, and they just run around, and they try and jump at you and hit you, and you have to kill them. And,
okay, that's, yeah, as one does.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. I like that. Little beanbag mushrooms.
Yeah. So yeah, you see, mushroom people don't even have to have arms or legs. They can just, you know, they can waddle about, jump, fly, swim, whatever you want them to do.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, there was actually a mushroom kind of like that in an old Sega Genesis Goofy video game.
Probably, yeah.
I kind of like them. That was fun. Yeah.
Oh, and let's not forget, you know, everyone's favorite mushroom, orcs.
Orcs.
Yes, according to Warhammer 40K lore, orcs are in fact a fungal creature.
Right.
Which is, I guess, one of the reasons why they're so terrifying is, you know, once the spores get on a planet, really all you can do is just burn it from orbit.
Essentially, yes. Because in early Warhammer 40K lore, it was stated that orcs are actually a form of fungus. And that anytime they are harmed or killed, they release spores, much like a puffball mushroom. And these spores would go out and float around and then find some ground to fall in. And inevitably, almost every single spore would result in a new orc, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Friggin' orcs.
Yeah. I love them. Green skins.
I do too. I rather like them.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Mushroom Men.
That's Mushroom Men.
Mushroom Men.
Mushroom Men.
Yeah, I mean, what can we do with myconids?
Well, let's see. Given that they have, like, a non-traditional family structure, but still relatively close-knit.
Yeah.
Given that they tend to live in circles.
Yeah.
And that they tend to communicate telepathically or through spores, methinks they're going to be a little different than most of the stuff we've covered.
Yes. I mean, just the fact that, you know, just the fact that they reproduce via sporing, you know, they're not going to have, there really isn't going to be a way to be able to identify who your parents are. You're the community's children. And on top of that, you know, if they're not necessarily having to breed with each other, it's going to eliminate an entire idea of gender. They're not going to really have a concept of sex, probably.
Right. Because they are generally asexual.
Yeah.
Dang. That eliminates mushrooms with boobs.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Why would we have to eliminate that? Oh, no. What are we going to do without boobs? How are we going to tell which one's the hot one?
See? You get it? No, but seriously, don't put boobs on mushrooms.
Please don't.
This is coming from me. Right? That should carry some weight here.
Yeah.
But no. It will. It'll be important that, I guess, in the development of the culture for anyone actually playing it, that there is no sexual deviation. There is no sexual dichotomy.
Yeah.
It's, you have mushroom men.
Yeah.
Mushroom folk, I guess.
Myconids.
Myconids.
Yeah.
You got myconids. That's it. You don't have a boy myconid and a girl myconid or a third or fourth gender myconid. You have a myconid.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect their society in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because so much society for even real life animals and for humans is based around the concept of, generally, people assume there are two sexes, and they assume that's, like, the only.
Yeah.
And so that shapes a lot of things. But with a species without any sex at all, no gender, no sex, there's something unifying about it almost.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can look at certain colony animals and that kind of stuff. It's definitely, especially, I think, groups of animals that don't necessarily have, you know, a leader or mm-hmm. kind of, you know, an apex or ruling group of individuals.
Right.
It's pretty much just down to, you know, whoever is kind of seen as on top is just whoever happened to get, you know, the best resources or has the most prime egg laying spot or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of how this would go is, you know, a colony of myconids really wouldn't have a leader. It would, but it, and, And no, like, single Myconid would be all that more powerful or better than another Myconid. But you would have, you know, the couple of Myconids that have, like, the really, really nice logs that they get to feed off of.
And, right.
And just, you know, by owning those logs, they're put as a little bit higher esteem than everyone else.
Right. Or you'd have an elder.
Yeah.
Like, as in a lot of the Myconid lore, there are sovereigns or luminaries who are just, just by their abilities or their age, they're considered leaders. Yeah. Like, you have the sovereigns because they've been there forever. They're old. They're almost like Elder Dragon kind of thing going on there.
Yeah.
Or like the luminaries who are bioluminescent.
Yeah.
So it's stuff like that, I believe, that would set them, quote-unquote, apart. But more like that would set them as someone others come to.
Yeah.
Because I imagine that there would still be interpersonal stuff. Because in Myconids for D&D, they have personalities. They are individuals. They're not hive mind, as a lot of people seem to picture them. But they do a lot of group things. They have group meditations. They have group hallucinations, group drug rings.
Yeah. I feel like it's, you know, I feel like the hive mind thing is something that people just kind of assume because they're a weird race.
Yes.
But I do think that it's important to underline that this is a creature that you can make very, very social.
Oh, very. And especially because they're in their core, they're considered very helpful, pleasant people.
Yeah.
Certainly not Mycelids, but Myconids are.
Yeah.
I feel like, however, there would be some danger occasionally in associating with them, given their spores. Which I imagine that a lot of people would have trouble with.
Yeah.
We're not able to tolerate that sort of thing in the air, like going into a particularly dusty library.
Yeah.
Some people just can't deal with that.
Yeah. There are a lot of people who are even allergic to mushrooms, too.
Really?
And this is before we even get to the point of if these particular breed of mushroom people are poisonous or not.
Right. Because that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of poisonous mushrooms out there. A lot of, like, really super deadly ones.
Yeah.
I mean, Amanita deathcaps. You've got, there's a whole long list of mushrooms that are super deadly.
Yeah.
And it's to the point where if you're in a survival situation, only eat a mushroom you can correctly identify as non-poisonous.
Yeah.
And generally don't even do that.
Man. And, you know, then if you start getting into kind of the more horror stuff where if you could say, all right, well, you know, a mushroom can grow on a mammal or a reptile or a living sentient creature.
Right.
Well, if they get spores on them or inhale spores and suddenly they're becoming infused with mushrooms, then what's that going to do to their body?
Exactly.
Especially when they're living mushrooms.
Which brings us to one of actually my favorite Pokemon, Paris and Parasect.
Yeah.
They are basically Cordyceps Pokemon.
Yeah.
They are crabs that have mushrooms growing out of them. And eventually it takes over their mind.
Yeah.
And that right there is an interesting enough concept, because a lot of Myconids have servitors that they have, spore savants, and it's based off of what they were before they were basically reanimated. And I find it interesting to think that Myconids would be, people would see them as strong necromancers perhaps, but really there's no magic to it.
Yeah.
It's all just their biology.
And, you know, kind of one of the things that makes fairy circles associated with magic is the fact that you can have a whole ring of mushrooms grow overnight.
Right.
It'd be a very sudden change.
Exactly.
And, you know, if this kind of sudden change happened in a person, you know, it might come and it might go depending on certain environmental stuff, you know, that one day they could be human, the next day they could be a lycanthrope.
Yes. Yes. A lycanthrope. Oh, yes. God, that's brilliant. I love that. Yep. So much. And imagine if, like you said, it came and went.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not even a moon cycle or whatever. It's just depending on the weather.
Yeah, the humidity gets enough and suddenly you've sprouted mushrooms all over your body and you're craving for dead trees.
Right. The people around you are like, ah, there he goes again. Yeah. Out in the woods. What's with the cloak? Don't know, don't care.
Yeah. You look a little lumpy there, Steve.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I just, bad day. You know, I was chopping wood and I threw my back out. You can really see it, can't you? Yep. Normal human things.
Yep. Oh, man.
A lycanthrope.
I am kind of interested in what they would do as far as food and agriculture would go. Because, you know, kind of the big standby for what do mushrooms grow on, the, you know, trees and other plant matter.
Right.
So they might even be, you know, their concept of, like, an orchard is, you know, a place where they grow trees to then have the trees die and then, you know, collect the wood to then, you know, feed off of, and right, that kind of thing.
They import lumber for completely different reasons.
Yeah, that does bring up, you know, they wouldn't use lumber for construction at all because they think of it as food.
Yeah.
So what, you know, they probably have villages mostly made out of stone.
Yep.
And
I mean, that's assuming they had, like, villages with proper buildings and such.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are said to live underground.
Yeah.
So a lot of it would probably be, like, carved out or dug out of tunnels and such like.
Yeah.
Because, number one, it's moist and pleasant down there.
Yeah.
And it can be heated and lit as they like. But I do imagine there would be some certain surface cultures.
You know, maybe even, you know, they have their, the forest that they kind of cultivate for you know, wood and vegetable matter and that kind of stuff. And then just have a city just underneath it.
Right, yeah. Oh, that'd be real neat.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you got them, you got the big roots of the trees, and it just sort of comes down through there, and that's how they monitor it.
Yeah.
How are the roots doing? That'd be neat.
Just kind of some kind of weird, you know, it's like, you know, toads with turnips. Well, instead of, you know, keeping an eye on the leaves to see how the taproot is going that you're going to pull out, you're keeping an eye on the roots to see how the rest of the tree is going.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
And, you know, then, you know, if you're getting to a point where you're having them trade with people, well, oh, you know, we've had this orchard, this huge orchard of apple trees for forever, and we've just been, you know, oh, well, the apples fall and they're decent fertilizer, and we collect the seeds out of them to grow more trees, but really don't care about them until they realize, hey, we can sell all these apples that we aren't going to use to those elves over there.
Right. And it just opens up a whole bunch of new business opportunities because if they don't need the same things other people do, but they need some of the byproducts.
Yeah. I think it's worth saying that they would probably actually cultivate and eat mushrooms too.
Oh, certainly.
Because, you know, it's not like it's a mushroom person. It's just a mushroom.
Exactly. And it provides the same nutrients that they are made of.
Yeah.
And where would they get? Oh, man. They'd actually have to trade for dung. Or raise, like, actual cattle and such like.
Yeah. Well, if they're, you know, getting pretty advanced at cultivating and that kind of thing, and they're already, you know, playing around with different kinds of fungus and stuff, at some point they're gonna start making, you know, cheese and beer and wine and kombucha and all that, and kimchi and all that kind of stuff.
True.
So, you know, they're gonna want cattle around because, you know, they can use the dung. And they can use the milk.
Yep.
And, you know, if your building material of choice is stone, well, you're going to want, you know, some animals to kind of haul those around. And you might need them for travel or something, too.
Yep.
So why not have some cows?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. And especially, you know, if you're, you know, the kind of mushroom person that you would encounter in your lawn, say.
Yeah.
You're in a mostly grassy area. Well, you know, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have these kinds of, I don't know, I guess, maybe like leather tent cities that you'd have pop up overnight.
Yep.
And they'd just be traveling around with their cattle, you know, collecting the dung for, you know, their traveling mushroom carts and that kind of stuff.
Right. And given the properties of cow dung grown mushrooms, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
Given the extreme hallucinogenics.
It might not even be hallucinogenic for him. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, imagine the first meal they shared with someone who wasn't a mushroom folk.
Oh, man.
That'd go poorly.
Yeah. Or, oh, man, imagine, you know, let's say there's a small colony of, of mushroom people, and they've got a bunch of land, and they're mostly keeping themselves, you know, eating their wood and,
yeah,
and, you know, tending to their cattle and stuff. But, you know, they've got their sovereign state, and they're looking to trade some, and like, oh, well, you know, we've learned how to, you know, we've learned from some dwarves how to cultivate wheat. So yeah, they gave us some rye. Well, let's go, you know, let's go raise some of that rye over here. We'll trade it off to this other country.
Yep.
And, you know, suddenly they're, you know, they traded a bunch of ergot mushroom person infected, you know, rye to this other country. The whole country goes crazy and dies off. And there's a bunch of wealth we can move in and take. Maybe we should do this professionally.
That's terrifying. I'm still stuck on lycanthrope, honestly.
Yeah.
Just imagine a dryad lycanthrope.
Oh man, that'd be, you know, with just these big discs coming out of it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's like an almost artistic thing going on. You've got wood mushrooms coming out of it, and it's just, it becomes almost proud of its status.
Yeah. Man, and then you knock enough of the disc mushrooms off of it that it starts to regain its senses and it's horrified and
yep. But it can't get rid of it. Because you can't get rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
Once the mycelium's deep in it, it's just there.
Yeah.
I wonder if mushrooms would have dryads. Big enough mushrooms?
Maybe.
Because I mean, there are nymphs of everything else.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna, you know, make a fantasy context where you can have a giant mushroom, I'm sure a nymph would live in it.
Sure, that'd be cool.
Yeah,
I encourage this.
Yeah, and you know, they're already you know, the ones that are going to be primarily subterranean, they're going to be digging through the earth and stuff.
Certainly.
And I feel like we've covered this with another race, but you know, they're going to find ore down there.
Oh yeah.
And mushrooms are just as flammable as any other creature. I don't think you have to underline the whole, you know, oh, they'd be scared of fire because they're a plant monster.
Although I do think they would have some problem with it, given their high ability to lose moisture.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Just the heat of it, they'd have to wear special protective clothing and only go in occasionally and for scarce times. And, well, drink lots of water.
I feel like that's no different than a person who's a blacksmith, honestly.
I don't know. Mushrooms lose water pretty fast when they're in dry heat.
I guess the big thing is maybe if they were doing anything with metal, that's when they'd be something they'd have on the surface that could be well ventilated.
Yeah, I feel that would be good. Or perhaps they might keep it more enclosed so that when they do the quenching, the water vapor just fills the air.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's something they would have to be more aware of.
Yeah.
Not in the same sense as, oh, dryads will catch fire. No, no. But, like, just due to the sheer heat of it. Because you don't see dryads in hot, arid areas for a good reason. Or not dryads, mushroom.
Mushroom.
Ignore me.
It could be a thing like how, you know, by the nature that, you know, a river provides an easy source for to turn a water wheel to then work a mill, you might have, you know, mushroom blacksmiths might, you know, just culturally, they might set up at bodies of water, at rivers, at lakes, at places where, you know, they could get an easy, fast supply of water.
Right.
They use to quench the metal, but also, you know, for light mechanical work and to, you know, keep them hydrated.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be a big thing because hydration for mushrooms is important.
Yeah. Which, you know, if in an underground context, you know, you can have underground rivers and dank caverns, that would be kind of the perfect place to have a mushroom, you know, anvil and forge.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because that's already going to be nice and pleasant and, you know, wet. You go spelunking in a cave and it's always wet and drippy.
Yeah.
And it's even more so, you know, in the rest of the areas.
Yeah.
So I think I really do think they're the perfect underground kind of people.
Yeah. And I do kind of like the idea that they, the kind of popping up overnight thing, that even if they are, if they have a small range that they consider their own, still moving back and forth all through it. You know, they would have a wide range of kind of buildings and structures and rooms and caverns and stuff.
Yeah.
And they may only occupy a tenth of it at a time, but you know, let's go over to that area for a little bit.
Right.
Let's go, you know, if you had a dense population of them, they might move back and forth and change reticences frequently.
Yeah. I feel like that would fit pretty well.
Yeah. There would be no such thing as a year-long lease in mushroom culture.
Right. I doubt really that the concept of leasing would be important to them.
Yeah.
It's just like, all right, building, I'm going to stay here for a while. Yep, you could do that.
Yeah. I feel like as a culture, they'd probably be pretty relaxed to the point where they might not even have, like, actual codified laws. If two mushroom people have a problem, they won't fight or come to blows. They'll just put more distance between each other. They'll just go their separate ways.
Or, honestly, that's if they can't resolve it. Because telepathy helps with a lot of things.
Yeah.
Like, because if you can communicate telepathically and send your feelings and everything to one another, diplomacy becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. Also, it can become a lot more difficult because of that. Because
it can. But generally, for people who aren't accustomed to it, for those that's their only way of speaking, I feel like they would be a lot more open.
I think that if you had passionate feelings, though, it would be, if you're a stubborn mushroom, I feel like that would make it even harder for you to, you know, give up your stance on something.
That's very fair. But I don't know, I generally consider telepathy to be one of the big boons to diplomacy.
Yeah.
But that's just me. And when you look at it, mushrooms have very wildly differing physiologies.
Yeah.
Like puffball mushrooms and your normal, you know, button mushrooms and stuff, they're all very soft and pliant. But when you bend them, they just snap. They're very fragile.
Yeah.
But then you look at false puffball mushrooms and they are hard and woody and just very tough. And then you have other mushrooms like gas bags that if you poke them, you can poke a hole in them.
Yeah.
So it's just, I find there would be a wide, wide variation in their types.
Or, my favorite, stinkhorns. They do have that kind of soft, supple, but thick trunk, but then they have this, like, hard, leathery, like, jagged cap to them that I think always looks really cool.
Definitely, definitely. My personal favorite is probably wood mushrooms, though.
Yeah.
And I honestly think a wood mushroom man would be interesting, because I feel like they wouldn't be able to be motile until they'd consumed, like, or run through enough wood that they could sort of make something like a body.
Yeah.
It'd be more of a shambling mound, but it'd be there.
Just a large disc person.
Yeah. Oh, God. A ground-bound flump.
Yeah.
The missing link.
And, I guess a thing that often kind of gets left out is like, oh, well, let's give this mushroom stalk, like, arms and a legs. But, you know, the mushroom body itself is, it's just a fruiting body.
Yeah.
It'd be like if let's make a tree person, and it's an apple with arms and legs.
Yes.
Like, the mycelium, the hairy bits, is the real body of the mushroom.
The roots of the mushroom.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that is that a lot of the times when you see a mycelium, that's only a small portion, or when you see a fruiting body, that's only a small portion of the mushroom. The mycelium is gigantic.
Yeah.
On any established mushroom, it's huge. There's actually, I believe, I don't remember if it's in Montana or whatever, but there's a mushroom where the mycelium is several miles around.
Yeah, it's a weird fungus that's very tree-like. Like, if you saw it, you wouldn't even think of it as a fungus. It looks like kind of a regular weird woody plant.
Gotcha.
But it's considered the largest organism on Earth.
Yes, because it's gigantic.
Yeah.
And it's actually really cool, and that lends a lot of interesting concepts.
Yeah.
Like, this a stand of trees, they somehow talk to you. Oh, okay, talking trees. What? No, they're mushrooms.
Yeah.
They're just one mushroom.
Oh, why do all these mushrooms have the same voice? Oh, because it's the same mushroom.
Which also brings me to an interesting concept, or an interesting little subsection, slime molds. They're oftentimes seen with or around or preying on mushrooms, and I think they're interesting as well.
Yeah.
I think they would be like, they would be to mushrooms as illness and disease are to us.
Yeah.
Just something to be avoided, but you can't, you know? Yeah. And I think they're interesting because a lot of them are very pretty.
Yeah.
Like when you look at slime molds, there are some that just look like little orange pearls, just swathes of them, like meters big. But they're worth looking into because there are slimes and there are oozes and stuff in the system. So why not apply that somewhere else?
What if mushroom men domesticated a slime from slime mold, and that's like a pudding or a gelatinous cube or something, and they use that as kind of almost a guard dog against this other weird parasitic predator in the area. And the slime eats the slime mold, but the slime mold still tries to attack the mushroom men colony.
Right. Or like they have it as like a pet or something.
Yeah.
That would be cool because that's something that a lot that like sets sentience apart from non-sentience is the ability to keep pets outside of the species.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that'd be really cool for Mushroom Men. Just, you've got domesticated slime molds.
Yeah.
There's a whole awful lot you can do with Mushroom Men. With myconids and mycelloids.
The whole being able... And this is definitely a thing that you could use to make them a little bit more relatable. If you do give them the ability to eat other organisms, even if they slaughter their cattle and then just kind of, feed on them as they kind of gradually decay... I'm hesitant to fall in line with the whole having them kill and eat other sentient creatures. Like, I feel like, especially if they are telepathic, they're definitely not going to want to do that.
Certainly, no, I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
Make use of a body that they find, certainly.
Yeah.
But not slaughter.
It might be even to the point where they don't hunt or slaughter, animals at all. They're the kind of culture that, once the cow or the sheep or whatever naturally passes, then we'll feed on it, but yeah. Only at that point.
Exactly, because they are generally portrayed, all right, that's a lie. In D&D, they're generally portrayed as very peaceful folk.
Yeah.
And that's how I've always viewed them, despite having seen every other media turn them into, XP fodder.
Yeah.
But I've always seen them as something that, because they're sentient, and because they actually share telepathic bonds and such, like, I feel like they would be very, very sensitive and caring. And even if not caring, understanding and sort of pacifistic.
Yeah. Oh, man. Now I'm just imagining, like, I really kind of like this idea of a mushroom folk as a shepherd or like a cattle herder or something. And I'm just imagining like one that has like their flock of sheep. And, the sheep are definitely there so that they can get wool to make clothing from. But, they make sure that the wool gets a little damp and grows some mushrooms in it so they have snacks along the way.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man. And this is a concept that I am openly borrowing from Minecraft here, but mushrooms.
Yeah.
Just like infected cows. Or sheep with their wool covered in mold and lichens and mushrooms and stuff. So they can just nibble on that. I mean, you got mobile food.
Yeah. I mean, a mushroom and wizard who cultivates a particular style of cordyceps that isn't as aggressive, doesn't make them, go up to a tall place and kill themselves or something. Just, a fungal infection that can make a creature just a little bit more docile, a little bit more controllable.
Yeah. And quick, easy domestication.
Yeah.
You can just alter it towards whatever you want, and then it's like, oh, hey, cool.
Yeah, a mushroom person could, domesticate animals that, no one else really thought could be domesticated. Maybe that's where the goblins are getting all their drakes from.
That would be a valuable service.
Yeah.
That would make mushroom folk completely invaluable.
Yeah.
This brings up the concept of mushroom dragons. Damn, that's cool. just imagining, you've got your reds, your blues. You have this weird mushroom that's covered, or this weird dragon that's covered in mushrooms. And it's just a dragon of rotten decay. It pushes out the black dragon of the area.
Yeah.
And it just sort of, everything around it rots, but everything around it also grows.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
A mushroom wizard's experiment gone wrong, but also right.
Yeah. Man, they'd probably definitely, like, I feel stupid that, I'm just getting, like, oh, maybe insects would be a thing that they would deal with. And yeah, they'd probably have, like, they definitely want to keep ant farms. Probably, the larger varieties of fantasy insects, your fire beetles and whatever, they'd probably figure out a way to domesticate those.
Kruthiks.
Yeah.
Oh, they'd love a good Kruthik.
Yeah.
I'm just now imagining, like, a convention for ant lovers in a fantasy world, almost entirely populated by minotaurs and myconids.
Yeah.
You'll occasionally get one eccentric elf who's been taming ants for years.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's interesting. Them just loving on insects.
Yeah.
Imagine one like keeping like a colony of insects in its gills.
Yeah.
That'd be neat.
It'd be so itchy.
It would. But, like, if they got used to it, or if they were, like, I don't know, infected and domesticated to be a little calmer.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Just imagine some of that pulling something out like that in combat.
Or, I mean, the fact that they communicate sometimes via spores, that's, you know, some you could use weird fantasy stuff to kind of cross that with pheromones or something.
Yeah.
Where they can, you know, they can talk to insects and the insects can understand it in the way that a dog can understand you.
Right, yeah. They would smell the basis of it and they'd be like, all right, that's weird, but I'll do it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, thing is marked as food. There's a lot you can do. I wonder if they would occasionally trade for bodies.
I feel like there are plenty of things besides the bodies of you know, other sentient creatures that would do the exact same thing that would not be an incredibly taboo thing for the other people to trade.
It's true. It's true. But I feel like certain cultures would do that sort of thing. Like, you know, bodies of their enemies and whatnot. Some of the more brutal ones, at very least.
Yeah.
Because they do. They have, like I said, they have, like, servants that they make from the bodies of others.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just an odd concept, something to play with, perhaps.
I would sooner see them cleaning up battlefields than necessarily directly trading with someone for bodies. I don't see, you know,
anyone trading away their dead.
Yeah, I don't see anyone trading away their dead. I don't see anyone killing their enemies and then going, yeah, let's haul all of these corpses to this other civilization.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Because, you know, any creature that can deal with the amount of disease that would come along with that are creatures like gnolls who are going to be eating the dead bodies anyways.
Yeah, I will grant.
But yeah, that's Mushroom Men.
That's Mushroom Men, Mushroom Folk, Myconids, Myceloids, Matangos. Yeah.
Thalids.
Thalids, just Cordyceps.
Fungi.
Mego.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Lycanthropes. Next time, we're going to be doing Mind Flayers and Illithids.
All right. They're pretty classic, aren't they?
Yeah. A big old tentacle-faced space people.
Oh, yeah. Space squids.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
Definitely. We did have one question. When we first got it, I had no idea what they were talking about until I happened to just look at our Tumblr page and realize that I haven't changed the question of our Ask Box since we did Rat Folk.
Ah!
or maybe it was Kobolds, one or the other.
Wow, that's a ways back!
Yeah, but essentially, the question was having something to do with what is a disposal trap. It was our ask prompt is currently ask us about waste disposal traps. That's back from either Kobolds or Rat Folk. I think it was.
I'm pretty sure it's Kobolds.
Okay, yeah, but just the idea of, you know, the storing your waste in a giant reservoir somewhere in your dungeon, and then just having it lead to other rooms that you trap to just, you know, dump all the sludge in when an adventurer gets too close to your treasure.
Yep. Which we think is a pretty rad idea.
Yeah. I will make sure to change it for this episode, though.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I still feel very silly now.
Yeah, that's a thing. I can't believe I forgot to do that. I just totally forgot about that, like, really early on. Like, maybe we made it, what, like, 3 or 4 episodes in?
I believe Kobolds was 6.
Oh, 6. Okay. Well, you know.
That's not as bad.
That's pretty good. Yeah. But yeah, our Ask Box is open, as always.
Always.
Creatureculture.tumblr.com/ask.
Creaturacultura. Yeah. On Twitter.
Yeah. Pagetish and Nolbard on Twitter, on Gmail, on Skype, probably.
Yep. On Tumblr. Yeah. All of it. Feel free to give us a shout. Yell at us for something we screwed up.
Yeah.
Tell us something that you want to see. Ask us questions. Any of it. We'd love it.
Ask us about tentacle wizards for next time.
Oh, that'd be rad.
Yeah.
You know, that could work for this episode, too.
Yeah.
Given the Parwans, tentacle wizards.
Yeah. Old tentacle wizards.
But anyway, that's it. Creature culture. Have a good night, folks, or day, or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think would be the cutest and also the most terrifying creature for a cordyceps mushroom person to infect?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because I'm thinking the best one would be a gnoll, because it would probably just turn into a big cuddly puppy with just weird, like, fungus coming out of its head. And then the most terrifying one would, I don't know, it'd probably make goblins even worse.
I didn't think that was possible, but...
They just turn into just rabid little ankle biters.
See, I want to say both the cutest and most terrifying would have to be bunnies. Like, legitimately. You can't uncute a bunny, but you can make it scary, too.
Yeah.
But I think realistically, I like your idea for bunnies.